Big Show, Thursday, September 26th. We were joined by a retired attorney, current author, who's written a book based on some simple rules that George Washington lived by. He learned these as a child, and maybe we should learn them and pass them on as well. And then, of course, everybody talking about impeachment, whether it's around the corner, around the water cooler, or around the world. Quinnipiac University law professor John Pavia joined us to kind of parse out whether this is much ado about nothing, something in the middle, or Armageddon for the president.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
And we are here at 203-333-9422-333-WICC, our number two of our four-hour get-together. Thanks for joining us. We so appreciate you stopping by. We know you have choices, and we do appreciate that. Civility. People look at the White House today and say, it's not civil. There's no tone of civility there. About half the country says that. The other half turns and says, good. I like a guy who punches back. They haven't been civil to us. We shouldn't be civil to them. Where's the answer? Left side, right side, some side in the middle, maybe? Joining us right now is a retired attorney, and he has an interesting book out. One of his books, Civility, George Washington's 110 Rules for Today. We welcome Stephen Michael Seltzer to the program. Mr. Seltzer, Paul here in Bridgeport. How are you, sir?
Fine, Paul. Thank you very much for getting in touch.
Well, we appreciate it. Now, I, as much as I've read, Stephen, about George Washington and all the lore behind him, and I've read about some of his battles in the Revolutionary War, about how humble the guy was, I didn't know these rules existed. Where did you find these?
Well, quite by accident. My wife and I went with another couple to Charleston, South Carolina for a long, relaxing weekend.
Okay.
And I went into the Historic Society.
Yeah.
And I stumbled upon these rules, and they were actually on parchment paper. I recognized George Washington's signature.
Yeah.
And I saw that they pertained to civility, something that I've been very concerned about, looked at the rules, saw that the first rule was respect, which I think is the cornerstone of civility.
Yeah.
Looked to the rule 110, that's conscience, doing the right thing, not the convenient thing, not the thing that benefits you the most. And so I asked for a copy of the rules, took them back to Rockville, Maryland, where my law practice was, and translated the rules from Old English to modern day English, and found that they were very instructive and relevant.
So that's interesting. You saw these on display on parchment. Were copies of these for sale, or were they just put up as a historical display?
As a historical display, Paul.
Interesting. And why? How and why did he, were these just thoughts that Mr. Washington had throughout his career that he kind of just jotted down when he had the time?
Well, some historians believe that these rules did not originate with George Washington, that they came from the French Jesuits. And George Washington, while he was in school at age 14, was given an assignment of writing down the rules as a lesson in writing. He then adopted the rules because he found that they were, in fact, the way he wanted to live his life. And what he did is he lived the rules, and the rules were so important to him that he kept the rules on his person his whole life.
Really? So he could refer to them and read them if he had a spare moment?
That's correct.
Interesting. You know, you flip through these things, and every one of them, Stephen, the guest is Stephen Seltzer, the book Civility, George Washington's 110 Rules for Today. You know what hits me about these, Stephen, is these could apply to politics, they could apply to business, they could apply to your personal life, everyone I've read so far.
That's correct, because civility is a universal concept.
Have we lost that here in society? And let's In my intro, I don't know whether you heard it, I said, Stephen, you know, there are some people today, whether you don't like Mr. Trump, whether you despise him, or whether you cheer him on, there are some people, Stephen, I think about, I would guess 45 to 50 to 42% of the country, depending upon which, you know, survey you look at, but they're all around there, who, you know, I think, I would guess, Stephen, at some point may say, well, the heck with civility, we want a guy that fights for us and punches back. What do you think of that?
Well, the last survey that I saw, mm-hmm. Paul,
yeah,
said that 93% of Americans feel that lack of civility is a major problem in our country. Now, civility is apolitical. It does not matter what your political views are.
Mm-hmm.
The point is to be civil. And so my book is not political, but inferences can be drawn from some of the rules.
Mm-hmm. So people can look at it and say, okay, I'm reading this. How does this apply? How does this plug in to what may be happening today or what I'm talking about or what my friends are talking about and how passionate they get?
That's right. What I tried to do here is to contemporize George Washington's rules.
Mm-hmm.
After all, they were written in 1746.
Yeah. And I see, I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but I'm reading one here. I love the way you contemporize this. The rule he actually wrote was, folks, it's unbecoming to stoop much of one's meat. Keep your fingers clean, and when foul, wipe them on a corner of your table napkin. To which you say, it's okay to bend over slightly when eating your food, but it's best not to give the impression of loading gravel into a dump truck. I like that.
Thank you.
Did you test these modern translations on anyone before you put them in the book?
Well, my editor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
were there any ones that your editor said, no, we can't do this. This isn't working here.
No, actually, the editor, who's a very, very fine editor, his name is Kevin Couture.
Yeah.
He's with Andrews McMeel, mm-hmm. the publisher. He actually was very enthusiastic about these rules, and he was very helpful with regard to punctuation,
yeah.
and grammar. And, in fact, we discussed the best way to state,
yeah.
To contemporize the rule.
Interesting. Another one here about, you know, what could be... I guess, plugged into today. It's very simple here. Rule 50, Stephen. Be not hasty to believe flying reports to the disparagement of any. What does that mean?
Well, first of all, this means rumor mongering is not a very good thing to engage in.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, nowadays and back then, there were a lot of what he referred to as flying reports to the disparagement of others. And, of course, I believe, and I stated in the commentaries, that social media can be very damaging in terms of rumors,
mm-hmm.
and disparagement of others, so that... let's put it this way. He believed that these so-called flying reports ought to fall on deaf ears and should not be given an additional lift.
Stephen, you know, as I read these rules and I've been flipping through the book, my immediate thought, Stephen, was, as you and I talk about how many of these could be applied today, especially when it comes to the political climate, you know, sometimes we tend, Stephen, I think, to wax poetic of how much more things were genteel and civil back then. Well, they may have been, but you read some of these and you say to yourself, boy, they probably had many of the same issues that we have today, maybe not to the same scale, but as they did back then.
Well, you're right. The example that we discussed before that you raised about these flying disparagements,
mm-hmm.
is a problem that existed back then and still exists.
And you know, if
no
you
question about it.
If you read, especially, and I love to read history, I love to read things, you know, books about historical events in the U.S. And if you look, and I'm sure you have, if you look at media coverage back then, now obviously, as you say, we didn't have social media, but you know, newspapers back then, as the medium was coming into fruition, coupled with the politics, they could, Stephen. There was a viciousness back then from newspapers, I think, far worse than today.
Yes, in fact, I state that in the book. That's a very good point that you make. No question about it. It was very vicious, and there were personal attacks and that sort of thing. And it is my hope that since 93% of Americans, according to the most recent survey that I read, think that lack of civility is a major problem, that politicians who look at the polls will say to themselves, well, if I want to get elected or reelected, I better not engage in these personal attacks on my opponent. I better not stoop low in the way I engage my opponents. I must be civil because people want civil people to represent them.
Maybe it has. Maybe, Stephen, they think that as long as they follow parliamentary procedure, I don't know, once a week when they say the gentle lady from Nebraska or my opposing colleague on the other side from Illinois, maybe they think that's enough. Who knows?
Well, that is fluff.
Yeah,
I mean that's a very nice thing, but civility runs a lot deeper than that. And I have to say to you, an interesting thing has happened. The book's been out since September 3rd.
Okay.
And sales seem to be brisk because people are
really
buying the book to give as holiday presents because I think they feel that George Washington has some valuable lessons to teach us.
You know,
give you the website?
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay, the website is Stephen, S-T-E-V-E-N, Selzer, S as in Sam, E-L-Z-E-R, books.com.
And it's got a nice compact size, so you could fit it into a Christmas stocking or a holiday display. If you're traveling, Stephen, you could put it in your bag or in your pocketbook or whatever. I, for one, think this list should be given to kids in every school. I don't care what denomination you are, whether it's a private school or parochial school. As you say, these thoughts from George Washington here, the ones that you say he culled by being in school, they're kind of universal.
Well, they are. And shows that you can learn a lot in school.
Well, yeah. Well, at least back then. I don't know. You know what? I'd be stunned if anybody taught. What would you say? These came from French Jesuits, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's what some historians believe.
Yeah.
Yes. The point being that George Washington adopted these rules.
Interesting. Stephen, closing moments here. Do you think we will ever... and I know there was backstabbing back decades ago or a century ago, and I know, you know, you have the smoke-filled rooms and deals were made and allegations were tossed around. Do you think we will ever get back to what people used to say were the gentlemanly days or the good old days in Washington where, you know, both sides weren't escaping every weekend on cheap airfare and got to know each other?
Well, on the back of the book, you may note, Paul, there is an image of a pendulum.
Yes.
And I state that civility is like a pendulum. Societies swing back and forth between extremes. And I think, perhaps you agree, that if we're not in an extreme, we're close to it right now. So, since that seems to be the way America operates, I would hope that with enough of us wanting greater civility, that pendulum can swing back in that direction.
The website is Stephen, S-T-E-V-E-N, Selzer, S-E-L-Z-E-R, Books, StephenSelzerBooks.com. One of the books you can get on there or on Amazon, Civility, George Washington's 110 Rules for Today. Folks, trust me, I like this. You can pick it up. You can read two or three at a time. Read the whole thing. Just pick out sections. Give it to people because they will like it. Stephen Selzer, retired attorney and author. Stephen, we appreciate the time today. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. And I think that you asked some excellent questions.
Well, I will take a recording of you saying that, Stephen, and send it right to my boss, okay? Well, I'm going to do that. I'm going to say, here's Exhibit 1 for my raise. Stephen, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks. Bye-bye. See that? I try. Civility, George Washington. Karen, can you pull that last comment off of the recorder and send that to the boss, both of my bosses?
Yeah, no worries. I can do that.
you can, and that, see, boss? I ask good questions. Seriously, though, Civility, George Washington's 110 rules for today. Aaron, give me a number from 1 to 110. Pick a number.
Let's go with 58.
58, okay. Here it is. 58 is. Ready? Aaron, let your conversation be without malice or envy, for 'tis a sign of a tractable and commendable nature, and in all causes of passion, admit reason to govern. There you go. So Mr. Washington said. You believe in all that? Sounds good, doesn't it?
Sounds great, actually. Sounds really good.
And he translates that, Mr. Selzer translates that as, spare others from words tinged by envy and malice, even when you find yourself in the company of those who flaunt their riches and accomplishments. All right, go ahead. Go ahead, flaunt that Mercedes. I don't care. I'm better than you. Huh. Want to understand what's going on with the impeachment thing? Quinnipiac University law professor John Pavia joins us. John, Paul here. How are you?
I'm good, Paul. How you been?
I'm good. And funny, I was thinking about this, John, the other day. You and I first got to know each other on the previous impeachment, if you remember.
20 years ago.
Yeah, if you remember, 20-something years ago. Yeah, it's been a long time, huh?
Unreal.
John, nothing burger, something in the middle, or Armageddon? Where do you put this for the president?
Oh, no, it's something. No, it's not a nothing burger. It's definitely somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, I was listening to Alan Dershowitz, and he was, it's funny, he's taking the position on this one that this definitely is not a high crime or misdemeanor.
Mm-hmm.
And I dread the thought of us having a whole, you know, 6 months of debate of whether this is a high crime or misdemeanor. I think if we've learned nothing else, it almost doesn't matter what the Constitution says on this in terms of defining high crimes or misdemeanor, because it doesn't define it. And if we've learned anything from the Andrew Johnson case, from Clinton, from Nixon, Gerald Ford was right. It's whatever the majority of the House of Representatives says is a high crime or misdemeanor at that time. So if you have a majority of the House, you're going to have articles of impeachment. And if they want to move forward with it and they have their caucus, all the Democrats in line, they'll vote in favor of it and he'll be indicted. And for the listeners who confuse impeach with the idea that a president gets thrown out of office when they're impeached, impeach means that he's indicted and then a trial happens over in the Senate. And right now, of course, you'd have to get 2/3 majority, and you're not going to get that right now with the Republicans controlling the Senate.
You know, John, before you came on here, I was kind of just remembering off the top of my head the similarities and the differences. You know, a lot of people are tossing the Richard Nixon thing around here, John. And number one, people forget he was not impeached. He resigned. He resigned because his poll numbers tanked. And, you know, political reality, I mean, I know there's a legal and a constitutional issue here. You and I both know that. But the political reality is, I wonder how the Democrats are going to deal with this if they don't see any great amount of the president's base leaving him, if they still see him at high 30s, low to mid 40s. And you look the other day, John, the Republican National Committee and his reelection campaign, the first 24 hours after Nancy Pelosi said what she said, they raised $5 million off of this.
It's a great point. I mean, it's a great point because it's true. And as I've seen, you know, just watching what's going on here, I'm thinking to myself, man, this could really, if you're a Democratic strategist here,
mm-hmm.
you really got to be holding your breath because this could backfire, meaning you could have a whole lot of pomp and ceremony, but you get nothing out of it. And it's not in. And by the way, I just don't think this is going to end well for Joe Biden. because I think some of the stuff that's going to come out about his son and his dealings in China and the Ukraine is just not going to be helpful to them. So I agree with you. I think it's politically very risky. The one thing I will say on Richard Nixon is, you gotta, and this is what something everybody needs to remember. Yeah. Richard Nixon was going to jail. I mean, he was.
Oh yeah.
There was no doubt about it. So when you say he left because he was a politics, yes and no. His only bargaining chip was while he was still in office, he still had. That's the only leverage he had, so he used it, and that's how he got out of Dodge, and he cut whatever deal he cut with Gerald Ford that no one will ever know about. But he was that's out of all the presidents that have faced this. By the way. He probably is the one that truly committed a high crime or misdemeanor, as the founders, I think, thought about it. When you add up the other ones, it was all political.
And John, also, we're joined by John Pavia, Quinnipiac University law professor. John, also, as I mentioned before you came on, there is and again, this all goes into politics and what they do here. Obviously, you and I both know that. But what you have to remember is here, Nixon, for the fact that he won two races, I mean, he was a guy who ran against two very left-leaning candidates. So how big were his wins? Yeah, they were big, but he was not a guy, John, like Donald Trump, who's got a real connection with at least half of this country, and Bill Clinton, who you and I both remember, much like Mr. Trump, was loved by half of the country, Bubba from Arkansas, and despised by the other half. So again, another part of the ancillary picture here.
Yeah, you're right. It's funny when you say that. Back in the 20 years ago, when you and I first spoke during the Clinton impeachment, I did a thing on CNN with Jeff Greenfield. It was a whole special on the impeachment of Andrew Johnson. Mm-hmm. And we talked about how, this whole impeachment process and the concept, it really, to me, is like this big red button on the wall that says, do not push unless you have to.
It's like the abort button on the Apollo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yet you always have some people who are just so tempted to hit it. And I'm not defending Donald Trump here, because I there's lots of things I have issue with, but to hit that button right now, it's sort of like being a prosecutor. Why hit the button? Why move forward with a prosecution if you don't think you're going to get a conviction? And I just don't really understand the strategy here, because I think they think they're going to wound them going into the election year and knowing that they're not going to get a conviction. I will say this, and this is the one thing, this is the wild card.
Sure.
I don't think Donald Trump is loved by Republican senators. However, I don't think they're going to vote to convict him. I don't think they'll get enough Republicans to cross over if it gets to that point. The one wild card is the Michael Cohen investigation that's out of the Southern District.
And could we see the name of Michael Cohen popping up again?
Well, to refresh everyone's recollection, Michael Cohen was Donald Trump's private attorney, who his office was entered into upon the serving of a warrant. He later was charged, and he pled guilty. So that investigation and everything that stemmed from it, that came out of the Southern U.S. just a U.S. Attorney's Office out of the Southern District of New York. Mm-hmm. And that one has been very quiet. That didn't end with that. And so I just throw this out. I've said this before to others as a wild card. In order for them, if this impeachment really moves forward in the House, they would impeach and go over to the Senate. The Senate would then try the president, and you'd need two-thirds in the Senate in order to convict. So that means right there you don't have enough Democrats, obviously, to convict the president of anything.
Yeah.
You'd need Republicans to cross over. And I don't think that's going to happen. However, the wild card is if, for instance, another shoe were to drop with something coming out of the Cohen investigation, I could see a scenario where some Republican senators might think about using this as an opportunity to get rid of Donald Trump. And
sure.
I just say that because there are some Republican senators who just don't, they're his president, they're in the same party, but they're not huge fans. And so it's the one thing I would watch out for.
Yeah, two words, Mitt Romney. No, there you go. The other thing I find fascinating in this final point here, John, is unlike Bill Clinton, who seemed to be two-stepping and backpedaling here, and Nixon, who was hunkered down, Trump is taking this. The president is—he's not running away from anybody on this. I mean, he is punching up, he is punching back, whether people love him or not. For that, you and I both know that's a split down the middle. But it's not like he's hiding from this. He's essentially saying, "Yeah, I did it. So what?"
Yeah, it's his style. I mean, it's his style, and I'll be the first to admit there's been several occasions where I thought he, when he's gotten himself into trouble, it's the time for him to finally stop talking, but that's not his strategy, and it's worked. I can't, you know, it's incredible, but you're right. He punches up, he fights back, he's aggressive, and it's worked, and he's doing it again, and I don't know. I mean, he's the, the rule book is totally out.
It's gone. It gives you, forget the rule book. What's that, right? And yeah. I got to tell you, John, finally, I listen, God bless him for what he did as mayor of New York City. I'm wondering whether Rudy Giuliani here, I'm wondering whether he's starting to lose it here, because some of the stuff he's coming out with, John, is a little weird, you know?
So I'm with you. I don't know how old he is now, but he's getting long in the tooth, and I just sit back and. But again, you know, the strategy they had, you know, going back to the whole Russian collusion thing, he was the front man, and it worked. So who am I to say?
John Pavia, professor at Quinnipiac Law School. John, thanks for dropping in. We appreciate it, and I'm sure we'll be talking in the next few weeks. Thanks, buddy.
Okay, Paul. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye bye. Yeah, Rudy's. I love Rudy. Love me some Rudy, but he's some of the stuff he's. Yeah, I went to Ukraine. No, I didn't. Yeah, we talked to the Ukraine. No, we didn't. Rudy. Maybe sign for. What's that memory pill you can buy? Prevagen? Maybe.